Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're plunging into a really dramatic story, the Book of Judith.
It's a powerful one.
Yeah, and if you're looking to understand, a significant piece of historical cultural work without getting bogged down in dense academic stuff, this is for you.
Absolutely.
Think of this as your way in, a way to grasp the essentials of a text that's really captivated people and, frankly, stirred up debate for centuries.
And it has a fascinating textual history, too. I mean, we see it in Greek versions, early translations, even later Hebrew versions pop up. And this variety, it's not just some dry historical footnote. It actually tells us a lot about how the story was understood, how it was passed down through different communities, different times.
Okay, let's unpack this then. Our mission today is pretty clear. Get a solid handle on the core story of Judith,
Right.
explore its historical setting, and maybe we should put like mental quotation marks around historical for reasons we'll get into.
Good point. Yeah.
And ultimately figure out why this particular story has resonated so powerfully for so long.
Exactly. We want to give you that key understanding, what it's about, why it matters, what makes it so compelling, without getting lost in the weeds of overly technical details.
Perfect. So let's dive right in. The core narrative. What's the fundamental story being told here?
Okay, so at its heart, the Book of Judith tells how God delivered the Jewish people from this really powerful foreign oppressor
Through Judith.
through the actions of a courageous widow named Judith. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's really striking, I think, is this recurring theme: deliverance by the hand of a female.
Interesting phrasing.
The text really emphasizes it. It almost echoes the powerful hand of God we see, back in the Exodus story. It suggests this pattern of divine intervention, often through unexpected people.
So it's not just about her bravery alone, it's framed bigger than that.
Precisely. It's within this larger context of God acting. The central conflict, it centers on the Assyrian threat under Nebuchadnezzar.
Okay, Nebuchadnezzar, familiar name.
Right. But the details in Judith take some, let's say, interesting turns compared to what we know from history books. The story describes this massive Assyrian army laying siege to a city called Bethulia.
And things look pretty bleak, I imagine.
Desperate. And it's right in this situation that Judith emerges.
She's the one who steps up.
Absolutely. And to give you a clear sense of the flow, the book basically unfolds in about five parts.
Okay.
First, you get the rise of the Assyrian threat, then the intense period of the Siege of Bethulia.
Sets the stage.
Right, which leads to Judith becoming the instrument of the Lord. The fourth part details Judith goes out to war her mission.
Okay.
And finally, you have the triumphant victory and thanksgiving. This structure, it really helps track the dramatic arc.
Okay, that gives us the plot basics.
Yeah.
But you mentioned earlier the historical backdrop has some, well, interesting features.
Quirks, you might say.
Let's explore those intriguing inaccuracies. What's going on there?
Yeah, this is where it gets fascinating. The stated time period is Nebuchadnezzar's reign. So historians put that roughly 7th to 6th century BC.
Right.
But the book throws in details that just don't fit that era at all.
Like what? Give us some examples.
Okay, well, for one, the book talks about Nineveh as if it's still this major power. But Nineveh, the Assyrian capital, it was destroyed in 612 BC, which is actually before the main part of Nebuchadnezzar's rule as king of Babylon. He ruled Babylon, not Assyria, in its prime.
Okay, so that's a big one right off the bat.
It is. And then the text mentions the second temple,
Which came later.
much later. It wasn't built until around 515 BC, long after Nebuchadnezzar was gone. It's kind of like setting a story during the Roman Empire and having people use smartphones.
Yeah, okay, I get the picture. A clear anachronism.
Yeah.
So big time mismatches. What else?
Well, there's more. The book describes governance by a high priest in Jerusalem. That structure, that prominence of the high priest, that's really more of a post-exilic thing, again, later than Nebuchadnezzar.
Yeah.
And then you have characters like Holofernes and Bagoas showing up.
Key figures in the story.
Very key. But historical sources connect names like those to a later Persian ruler, Artaxerxes III Oecus, who was around in the 4th century BC.
Wow, so centuries off.
Yeah, and some scholars even see potential echoes of events linked to Antiochus the Fifth Epiphanes, a Seleucid ruler from the 2nd century BC. It's like a historical mashup.
It really sounds like the author wasn't primarily aiming for, a history textbook account.
Exactly.
So what does this tell us? What was the likely purpose?
Precisely. And it's not just the timeline or known figures. The book introduces characters like Judith herself and this king, Arphaxad. They don't appear in other historical records we have.
Okay.
Even the geography seems a bit fictionalized, like this crucial narrow pass into Bethulia doesn't quite map onto known locations.
So the conclusion seems to be?
The most likely explanation, really, when you put it all together, is that the Book of Judith is essentially historical fiction. Its main goal probably wasn't strict historical reporting. It was more about exalting God as the one who delivers Israel, especially in times of crisis.
And emphasizing.
Emphasizing that this deliverance can come through really unexpected means, like a courageous widow, rather than just, you know, armies and kings.
So the historical details are maybe more like stage dressing for the main message.
That's a great way to put it, stage dressing. So a key takeaway here for you is that the enduring power of Judith, it doesn't really rely on historical fact-checking. It's about its powerful message, faith, unexpected deliverance. It's a reminder that sometimes the most impactful stories prioritize meaning over strict chronology.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. It's less history lesson, more potent theological message wrapped in a historical feeling story.
Got it. Now, how was this story received, given these historical liberties? Was it just accepted everywhere?
That's a really good question, and the answer is it's complicated. Interestingly, the early rabbis, they actually chose not to include Judith in their scriptural canon.
Oh, why was that? The exact reasons are debated, but the historical issues might have played a part, maybe questions about its origins. And this view, the rabbinic exclusion, was largely adopted by the Protestant Reformation much later on.
So in those traditions, it's not considered scripture in the same way.
Right. It held maybe a somewhat less central position, or was seen as edifying literature, but not canonical.
But it wasn't just dismissed everywhere.
Oh, not at all. Quite the opposite in some circles. The early church, for instance, held the Book of Judith in very high regard.
Oh, how so?
Well, you have figures like St. Clement of Rome writing way back in the first century. He cited Judith as this powerful example of courageous love.
Wow, early on.
Very early. And St. Jerome, you know, pivotal figure, translated the Bible into Latin. He presented Judith as an ideal, a model of a holy widow. He even saw her as a kind of type, a foreshadowing of the church itself.
That's high praise.
He even drew a parallel between Mary, the mother of Jesus, and a new Judith.
A new Judith.
Yeah. And then, much later, but significantly, the Council of Trent in the 16th century, reacting in part to the Reformation, officially included Judith in the Catholic canon.
Oh, okay.
Classifying it as one of the deuterocanonical books. These are books that are part of the Catholic and Orthodox Old Testament, but aren't in the Hebrew Bible or most Protestant Old Testaments.
So that really underscores this divergence, this difference in how various traditions viewed its authority and significance over time.
Exactly. A really complex reception history.
Okay, fascinating. Now, let's loop back to the narrative itself. You mentioned earlier some interbiblical connections. What did you mean by that? Can you elaborate?
Sure. The text of Judith seems very aware of and consciously draws parallels to earlier stories within the Hebrew Bible.
Like the Exodus reference.
Right. We touched on the hand of a female theme, maybe echoing the hand of God in Exodus. But there are other strong connections, too. Think about Jael.
From the Book of Judges. With the tent peg.
Exactly. Jael bravely killing the enemy general Sisera with a tent peg through his head. You see a similar kind of decisive, perhaps shocking action against an enemy leader in Judith's story when she deals with Holofernes.
So there's this thematic link, women taking bold, even violent action to save their people.
Precisely. And you can also look at Deborah, another figure from Judges. She's described as judging Israel during a military crisis, essentially leading them.
Okay.
Judith, in her own way, steps into a very similar role, leadership. Deliverance in a time of war when the male leaders are, frankly, faltering.
Interesting parallel. Any others?
Well, maybe even Sarah, the matriarch. Her beauty, remember, led to tricky situations with foreign rulers, but ultimately things worked out for the benefit of her family and, you know, the future of Israel.
Ah, I see. A woman's actions, sometimes involving her appearance or cleverness, playing a key role in the divine plan.
Kind of, yeah. It's about God working through these individuals in surprising ways.
These are really cool connections, and I think you mentioned her name itself is significant.
Yes, her Hebrew name, Yehudit. It basically just means Jewish woman or Jewess.
That simple.
That simple, which kind of emphasizes her role as this representative figure. She almost embodies the strength, the piety, the resilience of the Jewish people facing annihilation.
Wow. Okay, and the book isn't just plot, right? You mentioned literary techniques.
Oh, definitely. It's actually quite rich in literary devices. Adds another layer of depth, I think.
Can you give us an example? What should we look out for?
One of the most effective techniques is the use of double entendre and irony, especially in Judith's conversations with Holofernes.
Ah, when she goes into his camp.
Exactly. For instance, when she talks about leading him through Judea to Jerusalem.
Sounds like she's offering to betray her people.
On the surface, yes. It sounds like she's offering him a pathway to military victory. But the underlying irony, the hidden meaning, is that she will lead him to Jerusalem.
As a corpse.
Well, his head, anyway, his head will end up on the walls of Betulia, near Jerusalem. So she does lead him there, just not how he expects.
That's brilliant. Darkly brilliant.
It is. And even how she repeatedly calls him my lord. It's a polite form of address, sure, but it's masking her deadly intent. There's this constant layer of hidden meaning.
It almost makes you wonder, going back to the history thing, if the author was intentionally using those historical mix-ups, those anachronisms, to maybe signal that this isn't literal history, but something more symbolic.
That's a very plausible reading. Using the slightly off historical details to cue the reader that the deeper meaning lies elsewhere, in the theology and the character interactions, perhaps using irony to underscore God's ultimate control over arrogant human power.
That adds a whole new dimension to appreciating the text. It's not just an action story. There's real artistry there. Okay, so finally, before we wrap this up, what's been the lasting impact? Does this book still matter?
Oh, absolutely. The Book of Judith has had a huge and enduring impact. It's inspired liturgists, artists, painters, sculptors, writers, composers for centuries.
You see her image a lot in art history, right?
Countless depictions, often portrayed as this symbol of courage, of faith, sometimes righteous defiance against overwhelming power, against tyranny. This really broad cultural resonance just speaks to the narrative's power and the themes it explores. They still hit home.
Okay, let's try and bring this all together then. So the Book of Judith, it's this really compelling story, right? Faith, deliverance.
Definitely compelling.
Set against a historical backdrop that, well, takes some creative liberties.
Right, a few.
But maybe these very inaccuracies, as we call them, actually point us toward the main message.
That seems likely. That God's power works through unexpected people, unexpected ways. In this case, a courageous woman when all seemed lost.
So despite the historical complexities, maybe because of them in a way, the story's power is really in its theological weight, its literary artistry.
Exactly. It explores these big themes, faith, courage, how divine help shows up. And thinking back to that textual history we mentioned, that variety is important too. It shows the story wasn't static. Different communities, different eras, they understood it, they passed it down in slightly different ways, different versions emphasizing different aspects. And that whole process influences how we encounter it today.
This whole deep dive into Judith, it really highlights how stories, even the ones that blend history and fiction, can just profoundly shape religious understanding, cultural memory. It makes you think about the power of narrative itself, doesn't it?
It really does. And maybe that leaves a question for you, the listener, to think about. How does this focus on an individual's courage? You know, facing these seemingly insurmountable odds like Judith did. How does that kind of story continue to resonate with us today, in our own lives maybe, or just in the kinds of stories that capture our imagination?
That's a powerful question to mull over. Definitely a food for thought. If this exploration has sparked your interest, we really encourage you, go delve into the Book of Judith yourself.
Read it with these ideas in mind.
Yeah. Consider the different interpretations over the centuries, or maybe explore some of the amazing art this dramatic story has inspired. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us.